Here's a chance for a shot. Scores! Austin Matthews has done it again. 52 on the board. Marner with a pass in front. They score! It's him again. That kid has got another one. Marner centering in front of the goal. Matthews scores! Austin Matthews, the hat trick. And he now shares the lead with 54 goals in a season.
Just to be in the same sentence as a guy like Rick Vive and these other guys that have come before us that just kind of represented what it means to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. So it means a lot, and it's extremely humbling.
Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. I was a tiny bit worried as Vic was playing those clips. Might have turned the Leaf game off with like 3 minutes left to focus on the national championship. Who knows how many goals Austin Matthews scored once we turned it off. Oh, boy. Another hat trick. Another late night for the gang here, too. Ailish, the Austin Matthews hat trick. This is 12 of 13 games in a row he scored. How long can we ride this thing?
Forever, I hope. Honestly, when he gets one, and then you're sitting there like, oh, that's pretty good. Like, he's continuing his streak. Like, great. Hopefully Draisaitl's watching. And then he gets another one, and you're like, oh, this is pretty crazy. Gets a hat trick, and then you're thinking, well, maybe he'll beat the record with four goals, just like he introduced himself to the NHL with his first four-goal game when he was a rookie. That would have been pretty cool, but saves it for another game. Nonetheless, incredible. Like, once again, just a masterclass.
I'm just so upset that I'm not betting on his goals every night. Blake has brought this up to me before, but I keep forgetting. I know. And it's like, it's one of those, I don't know why, toxic trait things about me. I bet on so many things. So many things. And Blake gave me this tip about, when would you say that was now? 2 months ago? What are we at? A month and a half ago, at least, I would say. Roughly-ish,
yeah. a month and a half ago. Coming out of the break, probably.
Yeah. So about a month and a half ago, Blake tells me, if you just bet Austin Matthews goals every night, there's quite a bit of juice, but this is the number that you're laying it at, and this is the expected probability of this happening. And this is when Matthews is really starting to get it around a goal a game, right? And no one expects someone to have a goal a game. And all of a sudden, I'm looking back at this going, I have left a fortune. I've genuinely left a fortune on the table for God knows whatever reason, because I look at that prop for tonight and I go, minus for a goal. And then you have guys like John Cooper going to the podium saying, maybe Matthews could have 70. And I'm thinking, this is just a tire pump. Why do you say this? What is wrong with you? And then last night you go, maybe he can. This day, and I don't know. This is, he keeps ripping off hat tricks, and it's Vasilevsky. He's got 50% shooting percentage in a game. Sure, maybe, but boy, it's just every single night with this guy in a multitude of different ways. And it should be said that Marner is just an incredible setup man. And again, he continues to be overlooked in this Supernova Matthews season. But the combination of his scoring ability and this line, and this Leaf season, it's just, I really do hope people are appreciating it. And even if you're a dumb idiot like me who hasn't been making any money off of it, that you're having one hell of a time.
You're not a dumb idiot, JD.
I'm a big dumb idiot, actually.
No.
A big dumb
idiot. Just
dumb,
a little one. Just a little baby dumb idiot.
Just a baby idiot.
So, Ailish, one of the reasons Austin Matthews didn't get four is the Leafs were ahead too far for him to add another empty netter. The big story here, obviously, Austin Matthews, he ties Rick Vive with 54 goals. He's got a lot of games left here to set the Leafs franchise record, to push for 60, to push for 60-plus. That was the fifth Leafs win in a row, the fifth game in a row that they've scored five or more. Three of those wins have come against Florida, Boston, and Tampa Bay. This is not just Austin Matthews is scoring at a ridiculous rate. This is the Leafs just beat their three Atlantic Division playoff foes by a combined 17-8. Over the course of a week. And it leads me to, I guess it's about this game, but it's really about this five-game stretch. And if you want to go back further than that, to the Carolina game a couple weeks ago, the Leafs are ramping up, and they're ramping up against good competition. Ailish, what was the most encouraging sign from this game or this little run for you?
I have to pick one. Okay.
I mean, you could just give infinite if you'd like.
Well, if you're talking about the entire stretch of the last five games, it would certainly be about that top line. Yeah, being the best line in hockey, being the most consistent that they have been all season, and being able to rise to the quality of their opponents night in and night out and not just roll over garbage teams. I think if you're going to pick just one, for me, that's the most positive thing. Scoring as many goals as you have said is an incredible feat, and it is very important when you look down the stretch into the playoffs. Being able to look back and to have beat good teams handedly will be a lot of confidence for the Maple Leafs. If you're just talking about last night, I think you have to give a lot of positivity towards Jack Campbell's return, but I won't get into that because you said all five games. And
no,
I think
it's last night, though.
I said either or.
Last night, I think, is the bigger thing because, yes, in concert, it is all those things, right? Yeah. It is the way that the Leafs are rolling as a team. But I think that's what makes this question so interesting is that there were so many positives from the Leafs game last night. Like, when we were setting this up, I asked you guys, what is the thing that you care most about heading into this game? And we said Jack Campbell gets a little bit of a grace period. And then he has a game like that where he genuinely had what I think is his save of the year, right? That kick save, that cross-crease kick save on a 2-on-1 where Morgan Rielly got absolutely a barbecued was the nicest and most important save he's made all year. Total game changer, total momentum changer. And then for the rest of the night, he basically stood tall. And, yeah, he outplayed Andrei Vasilevsky, which... guess what? That's going to have to be the case if you're going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're going to have to make huge saves against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's not a team where you can just kind of get by like the Montreal Canadiens and hope that maybe you don't let in the squeakers. You're going to have to make grade A-plus saves. So I thought that was a massive game for Jack Campbell. But Ailish, you said going into this game that it was going to be the top line, right? That's what you cared about, seeing the top line dominate that way. And for them to kick ass in that fashion, where, again, they're doing the Harlem Globetrotters thing, I actually think that you were right in the sense of I wanted to see the little bit of the balance. Nylander doesn't even play, and who cared? Who cared? Honestly, do you guys miss Nylander in that game? Do you have one moment where you went, boy, I sure wish Nylander... No, no chance. That because that top line was that good. Because the top line was so badass and so dominant and just whooped up on a Tampa Bay Lightning team that is full of Hall of Famers. No, what was your guys' Brandon Hagel take, by the way? Like, wow, I really noticed Brandon Hagel a lot. He was sure, what number was he? who are you? When were we expecting to see Brandon Hagel? Was he also in the press box with Nylander? That was an ass kicking from them. And as it was happening, Ailish, I thought, boy, you were dead right. And once again, I tried to make it about something other than those guys, and it's just they're the team. They're the heartbeat of the team, and this whole season, everything else is just orbiting that top line.
Well, it's a simple, like, it's almost too simple of an answer, so I know that when we're thinking, okay, what do we care about? Okay, the D pairings, let's see how that third line holds up. Can they keep their PK and power play so, you know, fire? But it really is the main thing, is how is this top line going to do? And so, like, that's why... when you say it, it's like, oh, yeah, well, we know that. But it really last night was that measuring stick, that measuring stick moment where you're beating a potential playoff opponent. And just one thing that I thought was funny in the first couple minutes, everyone is tweeting, oh, we want a Leafs-Tampa series. We want a Leafs-Tampa series. And it wasn't, you know, a blowaway game at that point. And just because the intensity of the game was so good, it was a playoff type you know, mentality for both teams. And by the end of the game, I'm like, I would love a Tampa-Toronto series, especially if it's like that, because it was like a home arena. Yeah, it was like a home arena for the Leafs, too, because you had, you know, Soup chance, you had Matthews chance. I just thought overall, probably one of my favorite games of the season to watch.
I don't think either of you are wrong in the instinct to be like, well, is the top line, like, is that being the thing a little reductive? But it's worth taking a step back and appreciating just how special this top line has been. I mentioned yesterday Marner's at almost a 2-point a game pace for like the last 34 games or whatever, and that's really picked up against top competition. That was true again last night. He has 3 points. Auston Matthews, of course, he just matched the franchise record. This is the first player to go 47 goals in his last 47 games. You have to go – anytime you have to go back to Mario Lemieux to not only a player of that caliber, but a completely different offensive environment of the entire league to find the last time a guy did something like this, you know you're in pretty special territory. We kicked it around a little bit yesterday with something to chew on in terms of, hey, are you buying that it's different when it comes to Mitch Marner? What more do you need to see? It's text line Tuesday today, so all day we'll be taking text 590, 590. You can hit us with Jays and Raptors stuff. Ailish has some questions for you later in the A-list. But the big one here is, do you buy that they're different? And if not yet, what else do you need to see? Because there were more encouraging signs from this game. We can get into some of the smaller ones. One that stood out to me was, I thought Keith kind of, we talked to Justin Bourne yesterday about how you match up lines, what do you do against the Kucherov group and stuff like that. And he rolls out Giordano and Liljegren as the pair against that line, and they look pretty good in non-sheltered minutes against a very good line. You can pick out some small ones like this, but JD, are you buying that they're different? As we, again, 17-8, they just outscored Boston, Florida, and Tampa in the last week. It's not the playoffs yet, but look at the standings. These are playoff environments. These are important games, and we know that these other teams get up to try to knock the Leafs off their horse.
I know that the easy thing to do is just say playoffs, 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 and it's all about the playoffs. And but of course it's about the playoffs. I had people like that in my mentions yesterday when I was tweeting about 17-8 against these teams and the way that the Leafs have been looking as of late. And people go, they have to do it in the playoffs, they have to do it. Everyone understands that that's a stake, right?
Obviously, to win the Stanley Cup, you have to do this in the playoffs.
But we all know this isn't soccer, where they're trying to vie for the top of the table and win the regular season, and that's the way they're going to measure success. Like, this is North American sports. This is hockey. It's going to be about how they're measured in the playoffs. Of course, the Leafs could still lose. It's also hockey. It's the sport of randomness. The Tampa Bay Lightning, the year they set that regular season record, they got bounced in the first round to a crappy Columbus team, and they ended up with an injury and a weird suspension, and all of a sudden you could tell they lost momentum and they just weren't right, and they blew it, and this magical season goes down the drain. I think the Leafs are in the spot afterwards. I think that their moment was Tampa Bay losing to Columbus, was their Toronto was losing to Montreal, where it just, it got on top of them, and now there's just a little bit more urgency with the group. They just seem like a tighter team. And I've said this already, and I'm going to continue to trumpet it. They look more mature. Mitch Marner looks like a more mature player. Auston Matthews, more mature player. There's an ownership that these guys have of the team. We were talking about the Raptors. I believe it was yesterday. Yes, of course it was yesterday, because it was the aftermath of Kyle Lowry. And how Siakam and Fred VanVleet, they needed to take ownership of the team. And that part of the thing about Kyle Lowry leaving is not just that, oh, you're down a guy. It's what benefits do you get when you're not operating in someone's shadow directly. And I do feel that way with the Leafs, that there is no more babysitter vibe with them. There's no more, oh, you've got time. Oh, these guys are young. They're developing. Matthews and Marner have become the faces of the franchise. And that was always where they needed to be for them to win Stanley Cups. Both guys, the consistency in which they're playing with, like, that's what we measure greatness by usually, right? It's, hey, anybody can do it once. Can you do it time and time and time again? And the thing with Marner and Matthews is that it's time and time and time again. It's 47 goals in 47 games. It's Mitch Marner tracking for a 100-point season and night in, night out, looking like a guy who can get to any area he wants on the ice. Those two guys have completely transformed everything else. All the other dominoes fall into place. Yes, the blue line is more balanced. Absolutely it is. Like, Jake Muzzin's going to come back. He's going to slot in there and potentially add to that blue line that looked that good last night. All of a sudden, Tavares' line looks way tougher to play against. They've got depth amongst their forward groups. They've got three lines that you at least trust in a big moment or in a big game. But ultimately, all that stuff, it's Matthews and Marner. And the consistency in which they've played in this season, the strength of competition, which is not just being in the North and going into empty arena, and beating the brakes off of inferior teams and not really measuring themselves in a proper way, it's ending up in this place where I don't know how you could be paying attention to this team and feeling like this isn't different. I'm not saying they're going to win a Stanley Cup. It's incredibly hard to do that in this sport. This isn't the NBA where if you have the best team, you have like an unbelievably great chance at making it to the finals. This is hockey. It's a coin toss. You could have a bad series for Jack Campbell. You can have a bad bounce go against you. You can get goalied. But I don't know how you could watch this team and not feel like the decision, at least, to roll into this year and say, we're running this thing back entirely, was not correct. And I don't know how you couldn't feel more confidence that this group that has been tested in this way doesn't appear to be more ready and doesn't look like the best team, frankly, in the Eastern Conference. They do. When they are at their best, they look like the best team in the Eastern Conference. Missing Muzzin and Nylander last night, they put the Tampa Bay Lightning in a body bag. And you cannot discount those things because, especially after what Blake said, Tampa Bay is a proud hockey team. They knew that Toronto was coming to town. They didn't just slough that game off. We'll talk to Christopher Stieg about this later and what he thinks about how Tampa measures a game like that. But I can tell you this. Boston reacted quite poorly in that Toronto game. They had a meltdown. They were upset. Florida, same thing. Tampa, same thing last night, where you could see a loss of composure because I think all those teams realize Toronto is different. I think all those teams know they can't use the same playbook on this Leafs team as they could in years past. They're different. You have to believe in it. You have to believe in it because it's right in front of your eyes.
Right. And what are the things when we tee up the season as, nothing matters until the playoffs, like you said, that's not actually the case. We've got 82 games to get through. But what are we looking for signs that things are different from last year? One is, the overall quality, the better you can be in the regular season, maybe the more confidence it gives you, sure. But we're also looking at a top line that has been this effective and more effective lately against top opponents. We're looking at a team that's found something with a second and a third line so that hopefully it's not as first line dominant. The defense was a weakness, and now we're talking about, do you have to get Leo Bushkin, who at one point looked like a huge addition to the blue line because he was so thinned out, and now he's maybe the press box guy. Rasmus Sandin, who was their third best defenseman for most of the year, is almost definitely a press box guy if he gets back and in time for the playoffs. So they're also, they're not the best penalty kill in the league, but Mikheyev almost got another one last night on the penalty kill. Like, that is a very dangerous penalty kill on top of being one of the most historic power plays of all time. It's just every little thing you could have. If you were like, nothing matters until the playoffs, but here are five things I would like to see tick in the right direction that would give me a little bit more confidence, I would say they probably checked off four of those.
Everything.
The other one being Jack Campbell and the goaltending and where is that at heading into the playoffs. And the last two games, so far, so good. Obviously, we need a little bit longer of a time. But Ailish, are you buying that they're different? JD laid it out in pretty good detail there.
Yeah, I mean, basically touched on the main reasons I would agree, but the underlying one that I think is the most that I can relate to from playing is that level of maturity changes so much in terms of your performance and the trust that your fan base has in you. And to mention that the team looks more mature and more, steadfast in their approach is the biggest thing for me. You know, you have to learn from the last, five, six playoff exits that were devastating, that were embarrassing. You know what this means to the city of Toronto. You know what it means to wear that Maple Leafs jersey. Eventually, doing that multiple times and feeling the way you felt needs to ignite something in you, and there needs to be a change. And it really does feel like this time around, something's clicked and something's changed. I feel more confident watching this Maple Leafs team down the stretch here heading into the playoffs than I probably ever have. They've had very talented teams in the past. They've had teams with top scorers or biggest playmakers, but there's always been that question mark of, I don't know if it's proven. I can't say that I felt any more proven than I have over the last 2 months. And I know the biggest thing is prove it in the playoffs, but all we can do is watch what they do now and try to decipher how different it is from what they've done in the past. And I think that all of the evidence and all of the proof that they've put out is that they can be this elite team when it matters against the best teams in the league. And now they just have to continue to make us feel confident as fans. But I really will say that this time around, it looks like a different team. The leadership, the dynamic, of the players, the players that were brought in on entry level or low end contracts, contributing, doing more than they should. Just the makeup of the entire roster, it looks very solid. And I don't think it's too optimistic for a fan base to feel like this is, we're watching something great that we'll look back and say this team was extremely special and they proved it.
I don't, again, to me, this is not a, these aren't conflicting ideas. You can believe that this team is special, but also have your doubts about postseason success. Like, they're not mutually exclusive ideas. When I say that they're different, it's because I do believe it. We've outlined everything here, right? And again, I don't know how you could possibly feel that way or not look at this and feel that way. We're just evaluating this on what we have in front of you. Another one of those big differences, though, is last year they were able to be complacent, right? They were playing in that North Division. They had that thing locked up. Remember the stretch against Edmonton where they went in, they beat Edmonton, and it was basically, oh, okay, that was fun. North Division's over, everyone. What else do we want to see here? Great. McDavid's going to win this unanimous Hart Trophy in a season where nobody is good. In empty arenas in Canada, none of the Canadian teams were good. They weren't. They were all bad. And the Leafs, I think, got a little complacent. They didn't need to turn it up. And I think that when they hit the postseason, they were not able to, quote-unquote, flip the switch. They didn't have that in the reservoir. They didn't have that depth of experience, and they blew it. They had their Tampa moment. This season, they've been tested the entire time. Out of the gate, we were so concerned about, oh no, are the Leafs going to be able to deal with the ups and downs of this regular season and what's going to come from the media? Those first shows that we were doing at the beginning of the year were really hard because the Leafs were awful. And we thought, maybe they are just broken. Maybe they are just, they're transformed in the negative. They're not going to be able to get over this as the core. They're going to see the same guys in the stall, blah, 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 blah. Maybe a tightening up happens in the postseason. Maybe it does. I just think it's not going to. They do not look like a complacent team. They're showing up in these places. They're knowing that these are measuring stick games. They know exactly what the narratives are going to be from the media if they were to lose these ones. Imagine they went 0-3 here. Like, imagine what the reactions would be if Toronto lost to the Panthers, Bruins, and Tampa. Instead, they kicked the crap out of them. Now, look at the stretch. Look at the home stretch. They're playing for Matthews's Hart Trophy, which I actually think that, honestly, after last night, he kind of locked it up. And I know that it's early, whatever, but I said this to you guys a long time ago. He was going to be measured based on how he played these teams, and he just ripped a hat trick against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think that that's done now. That's over with.
He's still got also 3 more games against Tampa and Florida and, yep, and an extra one against Boston. If he needs to pad it down the stretch, there will be more opportunity too.
Was just going to say he's going to have a great stretch run and they're going to keep this momentum going and they're going to roll into these other big and important games. And it's actually going to be kind of interesting to see how, like, Florida and Boston and co. respond to these games now, because I actually think the rest of the league has to respond to them. And I'm just telling you, if they were doing the pick your team that you have to face in the playoffs, I really do believe that every opponent that has faced the Leafs would not be picking them first and going, well, these guys are chokers in the playoffs. Like, there's no way Tampa Bay played that game last night and went, we would take those guys in the first round over Boston or over Florida. No chance.
No, you don't get to, when you're the other team, you get to believe that as a Leaf fan and be worried about that and let that kind of block your optimism a little bit. You don't get to do that as an opposing team. You're looking at strength of the opposing team. It's the same way that that Leafs fans can look at Boston and on paper, maybe they're a better matchup, but there's still going to be a part of you that's like, ooh, Boston, I don't know about that. Sure. So last night, the Leafs win 6-2. It's in hand. Other than, hey, is Matthews going to tack on a fourth? It gave us some breathing room to channel surf a little bit. And it was a necessary night to do that because it was a national championship game in college basketball last night on the men's side. South Carolina had won the national championship on the women's side the night before in a battle of excellent Canadians. Then we get Kansas, UNC. We get North Carolina up 15 at half, and Kansas comes out of the break with this monster run, comes down to the wire. There's an injury late after Bacot had 15 and 15, 3 double-doubles on the North Carolina side. Kansas comes back. They come back. They come back. They come back. They edge JD's wake and rake bet over the line, and they steal the national championship from North Carolina's hands. right down the stretch, one of the best national championship games you can imagine. A little sleepy for it today, but how are you guys feeling after that one? JD, I know that was a big, based on the text from the first half to the text of the second half, that was a big ride for you.
So I just love national championship games that we're going to remember. Like, that's all I ever want from my national championship game is what is the memory from it? What is the collective memory? Because there are so many things that end up coming up. It's a competitive content slate. I'm sure a lot of people just ended up going to bed. But watching Kansas come back in the second half, and even just the way that that game ended, is why I just love college basketball so much and why it's so fun to ride with these tournaments, is that if that was a massive lead. And Kansas completely fell apart. And I don't know if you guys stuck around for the broadcast or for the celebration after, because it was late, but Bill Self delivered an all-time halftime speech. He said, would you rather be down 15 at half or 9 with a few minutes left? And I went, boy, that's – he's like, we coasted off that. And you could tell that that actually resonated with that group when they came out of the half, because they were dialed in. They were locked in. It's an older Kansas team. It was a tough Kansas team. It was an unbelievably talented Kansas team. But I just to watch that group of kids have that resilience in the second half, where they just showed up and they played that way on both ends. McCormick's defense in the second half, like the way that he protected the rim. And so Siakam, I know everything relates back to the Raptors, but you remember the game where he had five fouls and everyone's going, boy, how could he play this way with the five fouls? McCormick gets three fouls basically at the start of the second half and never shies away defensively and just is a presence inside. Totally changed things for North Carolina. All of a sudden, they're kind of late shot clock, relying on Love to kind of attack late or pull up and shoot. Changed the game. Their defense changed the game. They stayed confident. They stuck with it. They came back. And it was an incredibly exciting finish. And I didn't feel as bad for North Carolina. And I know it's kind of the joke about them beating Duke, and that's what they call their championships. But you ended Coach K's season, and you got the end of the Cameron Indoor Crazes thing. Imagine a Duke fan trying to say anything about that to you. Like, those were championships. You got a championship season. I really thought this was kind of the best of both worlds, where you go, hey, they're just kids. Everyone leaves with a trophy. And they sort of both did. So I loved it. We're always going to remember the Kansas comeback. Anyways, those of us that watch these games. So I was enthralled. I loved it.
So, yeah, it's hard to feel too bad for UNC other than Baycott, because that injury late. But man, talk about an all-time like college star guy you'll remember making performance. Him playing through these injuries this weekend and putting up those kind, like, he had 6 offensive rebounds last night. And I know that he didn't shoot the ball particularly well.
I feel like they all came in the first half, though. Like, he got 6 offensive rebounds all in the first half, and then the second half.
So he's playing on one leg, and he goes 15 and 15, plays almost the entire game until his leg gives out. I thought that was a star-making performance. The fact that Leaky Black scores 2 points, and every casual fan who tunes in is like, oh yeah, Leaky Black's like one of the best defenders. You mentioned McCormick. McCormick has a huge game too, where you're talking about, hey, why isn't this guy on the draft radar, maybe? Or and you could think the same for Braun. So I feel bad for Baycott. I don't know about feeling bad for North Carolina fans overall, other than you're now, yes, you won a championship, you retired Coach K.
Yeah.
You're also the team, though, that gave up the biggest lead in NCAA history, going back to, like, I think, like the 60s or the 70s or something like that. A halftime lead of that size hadn't been blown in forever. Ailish, your emotions riding through that one.
Oh, that's like, that's why I love college sports in general. It's like, you can never count anyone out, and I was not confident that it was going to turn around that way, but that's why you watch sports, right? You want to know how a team responds being down. I thought the most intriguing thing was that halftime break. You're either going to come out and that's it, you know, give up or go on a run. And they certainly went on a run that was inspiring. And just a level of confidence that must give you to be like, now it's our game. Like, who cares what happened in the first half? This is now our game. We're in control. And then UNC basically has to play kind of behind for the rest, like with a little bit of a, oh God, don't let this happen. We're going to be the team that blew the lead. And I think that just that level of confidence and that momentum that you get from a great coaching moment in the locker room. I know what that feels like. I've been in there before when you're down or you don't have the level of confidence going into a big game. And so incredible to kind of hear behind the scenes of what happens there and how it affects these young athletes. And they're young. Like, this isn't the NBA finals. This is the biggest game that they've ever played in their lives, ever. And like, they're going to think about this moment and this storybook ending. And it's either you are an athlete that can handle that pressure and that weight on your shoulders or not. And I think Kansas, you know, obviously, I think has been the more talented team down the stretch with the better players. And it just took them that second half to kind of put it together. But incredible to watch. I love March Madness. What a great ending. The biggest comeback ever that we've seen. And you're right. I like to remember games that have some sort of resonance with us. And that will certainly be one when we talk about March Madness.
This is the worst day of the year where, you know, it's like, there's actually two worst sports days of the year for me. The first is when the championship games in football are done and you realize you only have the Super Bowl left, because the Super Bowl is like not even really football. It's just it's an extravaganza, right? It's just an event. Football is over after the championship games. And then the day after March Madness finishes, the championship game is done and you're used to having all these games in your life and you go, but I was watching those. Like, what are we doing now? What I'm supposed to go? Thank goodness the NBA playoffs are starting now, because I have zero interest in any more regular season stuff. Now that the Raptors are locked into non-play-in and that the Lowry game is out of the way, I don't know. I think Scotty Barnes. I think Scotty Barnes now again has Rookie of the Year. I really do. I think that there's no other case he can make. Like, he's not swinging it one way or another. Either you're voting for Mobley because Mobley's out or not. So there's just nothing regular season left that I care about. Hockey, it's going to be fun. Continue down the stretch because we have the Matthews goal chase. But I like my little extra thing that I just get to enjoy sports on the side and don't have to have takes on, which is March Madness. So, speaking of the Kyle Lowry game and the Raptors.
Yeah.
Before we take a break, I have a topic for the text line that I think is going to pop. We'll see. We'll see if I'm just the crazy one. So yesterday on the show, if you'll recall, I brought up how I had no sympathy for Raptors fans that weren't in their seats to start the Kyle Lowry celebration. That a lot of times it's done at the beginning of the first time out of the game so that people can settle into their seats. But with Kyle Lowry, this wasn't the return of Isaiah Thomas to the Boston Celtics, right? This is a bigger deal, and the only way to properly handle it was to have the ceremony before the game. And even if that was a surprise to some people, that not being in your seat before 7 o'clock for that night, for that game, was a bad look for a fan. Someone tweeted at me that, his name was Doug, he tweeted at me, "We showed up at 6:15 to get into the game and still were barely in our seats." To which I replied, 6:15 for a big game is outrageously late. Like, outrageously late. From my standpoint, if I'm going to a big game, and I even referenced Canada Soccer, I'm showing up at least an hour and a half early. He mentions that gates don't open. Yeah, but you can still get in line for the gates. Like, they don't prevent you from standing outside the stadium. At least being around and not having the rush and being there for when gates open to be at the front and to be able to assess the line, to me, is like the most important thing. Blue Jays playoff games, you name it. I've been to everything. I've been to everything big in this city. Like, you name the event and I've been to it. Showing up at 6:15 is outrageous. I'm curious for the two of you. Like, what is your comfort level in terms of showing up on time, showing up late to a game? Do you get the sweats when you're are you the person who's late and causes the sweats? Are you the person who is the sweater who sweats it out as they're waiting for a friend because you got there an hour and a half early, like I did with Coolbet Chris at the Canada Soccer game? Like, where are you at just in terms of what time you show up to a big game? What is your etiquette for a big game?
So I hate being late in general. I get a ton of anxiety about not being on time, and I'm very early for everything. A game like that, and I've interacted with Doug on Twitter before. He's a good guy. Disparage him.
No one's saying.
I know. I'm just sending bad guys. I don't want Doug to be like, "Oh, Blake, I thought Blake was cool, and he's going to sewer me." that one's on you, Doug. Especially in a pandemic era, you got to expect delays there. Get there when the gates open if you care that much and feel out the line and stuff like that. I don't know, how many times in the 2015-2016 Jays playoff run did we see tweets or people posting about like, oh, the lines to get in, the lines to get in. Yeah, it's a playoff game and the stadium holds 50,000 people. You should have planned accordingly. So I'm going to get there as early as you need to, and it's on you. Barring like something unforeseen where there's actually a reason that like an extraneous circumstance.
I'm worried that we're all the same here, though. I'm worried that we're all the same here because I think Ailish is a little anxious, too, and she's got the athlete thing going where it's you're always preparing and you're there a little early. You show up on time. You're at the arena early. Like, I feel as though this is going to be a consensus, and maybe this is going to be tough because we're all going to agree.
Well, yes, I think my history of being an athlete, getting there very early and finding things to do and also being in the atmosphere and enjoying being in the arena or the stadium, even when I'm not playing, I'm definitely there on the early end of things. But I will say you just maybe think about something that I absolutely hate, and it's a PSA, is let's say you are in that lineup and you're waiting and you know that the gates are about to open. Be ready to go through the security. I think literally my biggest pet peeve in the world is waiting behind people. They get up to the scanner and they're like, oh, my ticket. Okay, hold on. Let me grab it from my phone. Let me download my Apple ID. Oh, wait, you need my vaccine? Oh, I didn't know I needed that. Well, before. Oh, you want me to take off my coat and go through my pockets? And, oh, you need to look at my purse? It's like, what have you been doing in this line for 25 minutes that you did not realize that this is how it works? Is this your first time in public? Do you not understand what it's like to go to sporting event? I think, honestly, my blood boils being behind somebody that is taking their sweet time and then continuing the ripple effect of us all not getting in the stadium. Like, be ready. Just like have it in your hands. Hey, here I am. Boom. Let's go through the scanner. Oh yeah, that was my belt. Okay, no problem. Go through. Bye.
I agree. I completely agree. I actually love at soccer because their metal detector, I guess, is something about it. It scans the below the waist almost or something. Or I don't know exactly how it works, but you have to raise your hands up like you're a criminal and you're like, hey, don't shoot. You do the don't shoot pose and then you walk through the metal detector and that's it. And they just go like, go in. I'm like, yes, this is perfect. Oh, you hold your phone and keys up in your hands, right? In your hands and you go. They're is a little bit of overzealousness, I think, with the security staffs at the time, but that they're just doing their jobs. However, I will say that if we weren't all, you know, some of us have purses. I'm just saying one of the
I don't bring a purse to sporting events.
I know you
it's
don't.
It's in my pocket. I Boom, know here are you my don't. Keys, here's my phone. I know I have you to don't. Bring.
I'm just saying a lot of tote bags and a lot of purses. And when it comes to slowing down the line, like what I would say, one group is more responsible than the other. Yeah.
And this is a PSA to all my ladies out there. You can bring your stuff, but be ready. You know you are five people away from the front, four people away from the front. Get that bag open, unzipper it for everybody. You know, get the things that you need, rummage around. It's not difficult.
Rummage around. Well, also just like don't bring everything to the game. Like, can't we have like a game day purse that's a little bit more I don't know, easy to navigate with the little stick they put in there and move the stick around so that it's easy and they don't go, what's this or what's that? There's not just water bottles that have half drank and you go, oh, I
How
like
old
my
is this
Nalogene.
Sandwich?
Yeah, exactly. Like, ladies, can we at least clean up the purse just a little bit?
Yeah,
like, that's my only
I'll
request.
I'll take that one for the ladies.
Yes, exactly. That's my only request. That's my
Here
only
you
request.
Go.
But be ready.
Get to the game early. Get to the game early. Be ready. Women, be shopping. That's the three big things this morning. Let us know on the text line what your protocol is there with your group of friends or at what point. I think an interesting wrinkle, if we all agree on being early here, is at what point, if you're early and the person you're going with is running behind, at what point do you just go in? Is another interesting one.
You go in.
Oh, I'll bail. But
I'll send you my ticket and meet me inside when I have a beer.
I'm setting the people up for the text line here.
Well, they better agree.
The other one is just if the game is at 7, if the big game is at 7, what time are you mad at your friend if they're showing up after?
Right. Like, what time? And what time do you bail on them and just go in?
Yeah. What time do you fire your text, a passive aggressive text to your friend? At what point?
Oh, it's not passive aggressive if you're late.
Yeah. Well, passive aggressive.
I'll tell you this, JD. If you show up late for the Jays opener on Friday,
no.
I'll be several King Cans in by the time
I'm already. I'm gonna be living down at the Jays game for Friday. Yeah, I'm so excited.
I thought we were doing
the
morning show from the Rogers Center and staying all day.
Don't give them that idea. But yes, maybe we are.
All right, let us know those things in the text line. Let us know your Leafs takes, Raptors, Jays, all that good stuff. 590, 590. You can text us all day. We'll be answering those. We've got a show with Jeff Merrick, John Morosi, Christopher Stieg later as well. But next, it's the A-List on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let it burn. Let it burn. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday. Hit us up with your pre-game as a fan. Just mentality, timing. We already got some texts about those people that hold everybody up in security. I'll get to those. Don't you worry. But the intro song to the A-List, Let It Burn, I think will be a spicy, fiery text line posing segments, so let's just get right into it.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So we know there's a very competitive MVP debate going on in the NBA, and this might swing some voters. So The Athletic did a profile on Joel Embiid where they got, you know, his players, his teammates to talk about him and what it's like playing with him and what he is like as a competitor. But the main underlying thing that I got from it is that he has some awful food takes. Apparently, he likes his steak burnt, and not just burnt, but burnt enough that the chef would come out while they're on the road to a very well-known steakhouse. It doesn't tell you which one it is, and say, honestly, sir, we cannot cook your steak like this. Like, this is a disgrace to our restaurant to be burning this piece of meat so much. Joel Embiid said, I hate this place. I'm never coming back.
Smart. That's horrible that they said that to him.
Like a disrespectful amount of burnt, though. Like,
who cares? He's Joel Embiid. He's a millionaire who wants a steak done a certain way. It's a restaurant. He didn't show up. Sir, we're not going to do a steak like this. Like, no, it's a steakhouse. Do it how I say. What are we talking about here?
So then also, apparently, Tyrese Maxey one day brought wings on the plane. And I guess Joel Embiid was like, hey, give me some wings, whatever. So now every time that he goes on the plane, Maxey has to bring him like 30 wings, but they need to be extra, extra, extra burnt wings. So I guess Joel Embiid has this must be burnt type of meat mentality. I thought, okay, you know, I know that Blake has his own food preferences where he doesn't eat potatoes at all, nothing but the potato, fries, just name it.
Okay, why are you just turning this into a hating
but
on
what
Blake
I'm
thing?
Saying, okay, yeah. One thing, just giving the people some you know, context is like, what is your food? I have to have it this way or I won't eat it. So if you're a burnt steak person, text that in. If you, I can't eat potatoes, text that in. What is your, you know, your food take?
Okay.
People love food.
I just need to say this though about this A-List item. Steak guys and steak gals are the weirdest people. I'm not the premier steak person, right? I don't eat it very often. And so maybe I'm not the one to weigh in on this. But I believe in respecting the animal and thanking, being grateful that an animal has given their life for you to eat. I'm serious. Like, I actually think that what kind of sucks about not to be preachy here, but factory farming, like, we don't have any idea of, like, where our food comes from, essentially. Like, no one's even, like, seen a cow. Like, you know, no one even knows what they look like. Other than maybe you saw one in a field one time when you were driving in a highway and you went, oh, is that a cow? And you went, nah, it's not, I'm pretty sure it wasn't it. So, don't get me wrong. Like, the animal died for you to be eating it, great. But this whole thing of, like, once it's dead, and these steak people who go, these are the ways that a steak has to be and how it gets to be this outrageous back and forth of what is right and what isn't right and what can you put on a steak and what can you not put on a steak has got to be the dumbest argument in the history of all of arguments. And if Joel Embiid goes into a restaurant and it's a steakhouse and he says, I want my steak burnt, then guess what, chef? You make that steak and you burn it. You burn it to a crisp for Mr. Embiid because he's going to leave you a hugely fat tip. He's a millionaire. And your crew, like, what does that say to the staff? That they've cut, the chef goes, I'm not cooking Joel Embiid that way. That staff was about to get a tip that was going to carry a kid into college. What are you doing? Just stop with this steak stuff of there's only one way to do it. It's like, this guy likes his steak cooked that way. Who cares? You like yours this way. I'll never understand this debate, this discussion, this argument. What's disrespectful to the cow? Did you guys consult this cow that you never met once in your life? Like, what are we doing here? This is so stupid.
I'll just say, if you guys ever eat me, no, nothing more than rare. If I want you guys to taste the whole thing. I'm with you.
I think you should try a steak that's rare or medium rare once in your life and not just default.
Yeah, I've never really understood the policing other people, what other people do with their food thing, like the pineapple.
No, but this one in particular,
that some people, I know, I'm just saying, I don't get them in general. Yeah. I will say, I would go as far as, like, if I'm barbecuing at home.
Yeah.
One member of my family likes their steak well done. They get the worst cut because you're doing.
Yes, that's right.
It's less important than that they have a good cut of meat. I like mine rare to medium rare. I'm going to take a better cut than you getting it well done. Anything further than that is too extreme. As long as you're slopping them up, we can have steaks together.
Hey, this water is not to slop them up. It's just for drinking. You can't. There's nothing that says I can't order water and a steak. But this is what I was actually also going to say is, why can't the steakhouse just have a bin of trashy steaks and they just burn one up because Joel Embiid won't know the difference anyways, right? Like, this is actually, the restaurant should covet people like this because they should be able to save on the cut because no one's going to notice. Like, if someone comes in and says, I want my steak burnt, then you can give them any steak. You could give them the steak out of, like, the TV
dinner. You
can give
them a pork chop if you really want.
Yeah, exactly. Like, open up the Salisbury steak TV dinner box, cook that sucker, fry that sucker into oblivion and then give it to them. They won't know a damn thing. So who cares? Like, I don't know. I'll never understand that. I agree. Like, there are frustrating things with me when it comes to policing food, Blake. Like, if I bring you to a restaurant and I say, this is the thing to get here, and then you don't order that thing or you don't want to try that thing, I get annoyed. I like to order a bunch of different stuff. I like to be suggesting different things, but to not, if you're the restaurant, having an opinion on the way the steak is cooked is outrageous to me. Like, truly, truly outrageous. Ailish, what are your thoughts on it?
My thoughts are that I want the text line to keep posting your
won't weigh
takes.
In too controversial for
well,
you?
No, like, of course I don't agree with a extremely burnt steak. But at the same time, I had a girl on my hockey team that wanted blue rare steaks. And we were not at fancy, you know, steakhouses. We were at Applebee's, and we were, you know, driving around the United States to our pregame. We're pulling into, like, Cracker Barrel, and she's going to the waiter, like, at, like, a blue rare steak.
Oh, my God.
You're going to get food poisoning. We're not at, you know, Harbor 60 here in Toronto. So I think that's a little bit extreme.
That's so good.
But yes. Send in your food takes. One last one here on the text line. I mean, on the A-list. So our guy, Lewis Hamilton, you're prepping for, you know, the Australian Grand Prix, which is next upcoming weekend, not last weekend. And so he's in Dubai spending some time in between both races, relaxing, having, you know, his free time. And so what he chooses to do on his free time, which he says, quote, is the ideal way to enjoy his time away from the track and to relax, is to go skydiving in Dubai. 10 jumps on Sunday. 10 times he jumped out of a plane in one day on Sunday, mm-hmm. as a way to relax before the big race, which just got me thinking that is the opposite of what I want to do to relax. I think that that would add way more anxiety and stress to my life. Just skydiving in general once, but to do it 10 times in one day just made me think, what are people's, you know, pre-game or pre-competition relaxation techniques? Are you someone that needs to go do something completely different, jump out of a plane just to get your mind off of it? Are you reading? Are you Zen? I don't know. I just thought this was kind of an outrageous athlete thing to do. I would never feel comfortable skydiving 10 times in one day.
There's two things I love about this A-list. Like, obviously, Blue Rares cracks me up. I'm picturing A-list as close to me going to the Applebee's and asking.
Well, she was from Alberta, too, so she was used to having, like, the fresh steaks on her farm, not Applebee's.
But the second thing that I love about this is A-list asking the audience, like, what are your pregame? What are your preparations? Like,
A-list, well, there's some beer league guys out there.
Yeah, sure. But you know what their pregame ritual is? Get home from work and argue with their wives about how many beers they're going to have after, and then make sure that they're home at a reasonable hour. It's not, they're not
pregame
ritual. Or
let's say you
ritual.
Have a big business meeting. You have a big business meeting. You have a job interview. Like, it's like a performance you need to do.
I just love.
Are you jumping out of a plane to relax? No.
I'm just picturing the beer league athlete going, the Lewis Hamilton story is interesting. I also have some very strange pregame rituals. Like, imagine hearing
from
your buddy.
You don't need to be a pro athlete to answer, but something of importance. You're getting married. You're going into your wedding, and, like, it's a big stressful weekend. How are you preparing?
How do you deal with stress?
My question.
Okay, how do you deal with stress?
How do you deal with stress?
Okay, so we've refined it. We've got it to that. I like that. With Lewis Hamilton jumping out of the plane, it's like he's drives a car 10,000 miles per hour. He feels nothing. Yeah. He's dead inside. He needs to jump out of a plane 10 times in order to feel something again. Like, I just picture him every time he's jumping out of the plane being like, feel something as he's plummeting towards the earth. Please feel fear. Yeah, just give me some feeling of anything. And that's it. He just gets nothing. And poor Lewis, he's doing too much. Too many adrenaline dumps.
Yeah, it's. I guess he's at that far end of the spectrum. I didn't put into perspective about what his actual career is, driving race cars. So maybe this is the way that he actually does relax. But yeah, not how I would do it. Interested to see how our listeners would relax / what your food takes are. A couple of them already in the text line. We'll get to that after we talk to Jeff Merrick. He is one who doesn't relax much, so I don't think that he would have too much of a take on this one. Let's take a break, talk to Jeff Merrick about the Leafs' dominance. That's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.